Okay, we have just a short discussion and entree to our question period from Jean-Marc Fontin, who will bring the view from Quebec as well. And while he's coming up to the mic, I wanted to thank Ivan M. Key and André DeCosta and Ryan Herman and Noreen Miller, who are doing the work to make the PowerPoints work here and on the web and to keep the audio cast going for us. So welcome, John.
Merci. Alors, je vais... Je vais essayer de communiquer. In English, please. So, thanks a lot to... receiving me in Newfoundland. It's my first visit here, so it's very interesting. And Rupert, when we were walking, thank you, told me that I was lucky because it was a sunny day. I didn't know that it's supposed to be lucky to have a sunny day, but it seems it's like that in Newfoundland. So I'm a co-director of the Quebec Network on Social Economy, and I'm a co-director because I'm working with Nancy Nintam, which is the other co-director from the Chantier de l'économie sociale du Québec. Leslie asked me to do a very short comment on the three presentations. I was very interested by the results from the presentation. There are different things that are very similar to what we see in Quebec. But I'm not here to talk about the Quebec, but more about the things I saw from the presentation. One is that, and we sometimes forget about it, is that social economy has a very deep history. And when looks with the co-op show us that a lot were still existing, some were more than half a century in existence. So it's brought us to the roots of the social economy. Another aspect that is quite interesting is with the Charles presentation is the fact that when an enterprise goes to a bank and asks for a finance to get a loan, people say, well, we don't finance a social enterprise or social economy or social development organization. And that's the big problem, the problem of recognition. The enterprise and the organization are not recognized by the banks because we are not doing things in the same ways. When you try to combine economic goals and social goals, then it's like if you were sitting between two chairs. So people say, well, it's not our business, just go to the government and they will subsidize you. But that's not the reality. The government is cutting out the subvention, so we need to develop new kind of strategy to be able to work, and one of them is to develop economic activity. So that's why social economy is very important now. So the problem of recognition is there, and I think the data that you have show up is very important because it's a kind of tool to work with the groups and go outside and reclaim the recognition that we need. So there's a kind of political aspect behind the presentation that we have, and it's a kind of we need to regagner la place qu'on a, to regain reclaim our place in the society. So that's about the theme on recognition. Another aspect is the collaboration. When Luc said, I was surprised that there was not so many collaboration between some co-ops. Well, it's a fact that we need specific tools to be able to collaborate. We need to have, well, when we don't have recognition, it's very difficult to say, well, I will go toward you. So first, recognition, and then we need tools. And of course, it's kind of business tools, it's kind of marketing tools, but we need to be visible. And for example, in Quebec, we start up a kind of portail, it's a web portal. And like that, people can exchange, know each other, and do collaborate. And when you want to buy a service, then you said, well, my first reflex. So we are becoming bilingual. So my first reflex will be to go and see a social economy organization, but I don't know them. So with the portal, it's possible to reach them. So we need tools, we need to be visible, and we need also specific financial tools. When the Paul Martin government set up the social economy program, we are financed out of that program. There was also another program that was set up for financial tools all around Canada, and only in Quebec and I think in Moncton now, we're able to set up some kind of fiducie foncière, not foncière, but fiducie de capital de risque, to be able to finance organization. And when we have the survey, Jean said that we need at least half a million dollars to be able to develop. Where can we go to have that money? So we go to the credit unions, we go to the traditional bank, but if we have our own kind of FIDC, then it would be easier to be able to develop our market. So the third thing I would say is that even if I'm not in Quebec, I rediscover the tension inside the social economy between the, not this is Penelope presentation, between the co-op mutual and not-for-profit sector, the tension between the families. I agree that the Imagine Canada survey was very important and interesting for them, for the non-profit sector, but it's not exactly a portrait of the social economy. It's very different. Of course, inside that portrait, you have information about social economy organization, but you do also have information about other kind of organization like universities. And I don't think my university is a social economy organization, even if we do have the kind of social democrat approach in UCAN. So I think we have to be very careful about the way we address the link between the not-for-profit organization and the social economy. I think we are part of a very large family and we have to work together, but the way of working are a little bit different. So if we do not highlight the difference, then we make confusion between the content of what we can call social economy. But that's a matter of debate, and I think it could be a very interesting question to address you. Do you think that the social economy definition is clear in your head, and that as a group you have a very, well, what I can say, perfect vision of what is social economy? So thanks a lot.
We have perfection here. What is he talking about? All right, so now the floor is opened up. Feel free to ask questions of any of our presenters, to ask questions of Jean-Marc as well, and so go for it.
Send your emails.
Yes, and the people who are on the audio cast, if you would like to send emails to seproject@msvu.ca. We'll have someone here able to pick up your email. Okay. If you could please use the mic, because that way the people in the audio cast will be able to hear. And maybe if each person could introduce yourself for the web audience, Colleen.
Hi, Colleen McCrory, UPEI, subnode 2. My question is for Penelope, and I have to say that I was quite shocked when I saw the low volunteer numbers. That's not anything that I've seen before. So it's I always sort of wonder where these numbers came from, because we had statistics that showed that in Prince Edward Island we were leading the country in terms of volunteerism, and that was also used as I can't remember the exact statistics, but it was a clear contradiction to what you were presenting. And so puzzling over that, I thought perhaps it was in the exclusion criteria that you used. And as I listened more, I suspect that is likely the case. So I guess my question is, it doesn't, I'll say one more thing about my puzzlement about that. So, and then I'll get to my question. So when we look at 91% of people saying their volunteerism is the quality of their life, I think we're missing the lived experience of people that we're excluding in those organizations. And so it does cut to the chase about our definitions. And I'm just wondering what you think about the exclusion criteria, if we did a comparison, if that would give us a more accurate portraiture. Because if we're going out and saying that, oh yes, in one hand, people's lived experience of volunteerism and what they're doing is valuable, and on the other, but it doesn't really count as social economy, I think we're getting ourselves into a strange situation. So my question is, what do you think about the exclusion criteria? Should we be re-examining the data?
I'm not sure what you mean by exclusion criteria.
Well, perhaps I didn't catch it properly in your presentation, but the hospitals, schools, the larger organizations that were excluded from the data analysis?
The problem was, as Jean-Marc pointed out, in this particular survey, hospitals, universities, and some schools were included because they're registered nonprofits or charities. In a lot of the analysis, we have taken that information out so that we can get a better picture of our sector when you take those out, and because they skew the data if you only look at the data with the hospitals in. But I wanted really to come to your, I think, the main point you're making about, well, in PEI we have all these volunteers and that's not what we're seeing in the surveys. We have exactly the same issue here in Newfoundland and Labrador. Everybody will tell you that we have the highest rate of volunteerism in the country. That's our belief of ourselves.
Well, we have data that was released
from,
I think it was the CCHS, but I'd have to go back and double check that.
So, you know, the other survey that speaks about volunteers is the massive one that's done by Stats Canada periodically. And, you know, it puts Newfoundland, ranks it as number 11. Is that right or wrong? I don't know. But all I know is that when we're looking at the comparisons across the country, the same questions are asked. So perhaps we have a different view of ourselves than is accurate, or perhaps all the research questions are wrong. I don't know. But what we learn is that there's huge variation in age groups in terms of who volunteers and who doesn't. There's also a perception in our province that young people won't get involved. And yet when you look at these surveys, the age group 15 to 24 has a much higher rate of participation than older groups. So I'm not sure where the facts are. I mean, I guess at our own community level, it probably varies. I wanted to come back to the exclusion issue just to make sure that we're clear about that. If you get into detail in this report, in just about every piece of information we discuss, we say this is what it looks like in total, and this is what it looks like when you remove these big organizations. So that you can, it's not getting skewed as much as it is if you don't remove them.
Okay, I just think it was to Irene and Luke. Is there anyone else?
I just want to answer on Denver and comment on the first question.
Okay.
Before we get to Irene.
Okay.
Just on, because I think you're touching upon voluntarism, you know, and it is part of a tension that Jean-Marc, you know, in New Brunswick they talk a lot about the voluntary sector. And, well, of course, the problem is voluntarism is important. Social economy organization of different types muster volunteer. They are able to gather them and to make them work and all that. It's very important though to realize that voluntarism is one aspect of social economy organization, that some social economy organizations use a lot of voluntarism, almost only you know, and other very little, and other in between. So I think it's important to see it like this, not to confuse. The social economy is not limited to the voluntary sector. That's conceptually wrong. There is voluntarism and voluntary work done in the social economy at different level, at different intensity, depending on the legal structure, the type of activity, so on and so forth. So I prefer to sort of look at it that way, if that can be helpful.
I'd like to respond to that, but I'll let other people go.
Together for the rest of the day. But one point that, in terms of exclusion, remember that Penelope mentioned that it the materialities reporting only looks at formal organizations,
yes,
right? Incorporated organizations. And so that's an important factor in the figures I think you're hearing.
Exactly. Well, that's just what I was going to point out, was that there is an important exclusion from the Imagine Canada data, and that is the cutoff point, the lower end cutoff point, with respect to the formality of the organization. And a lot of people who self-report as being community volunteers will be volunteering in organizations that were not included in the Imagine Canada survey.
That's true about the Imagine Canada one, but it's not true about the other study that I referenced, which gives the volunteer rates, which is based on individuals reporting. It has nothing to do with formal organizations.
Yeah, you can
use data in many ways. Yes, Gosling Montacchino, UPI again. If there's need for any evidence of volunteering in Atlantic Canada, look at us here, you know, pitching in here from the island. Just to pitch in and make it a bit more complicated, there is probably complementary data which Ron Coleman of GPI Atlantic has collected. It's a bit dated now, I think it's 2004, but his nationwide survey of... what was his term? I'm not sure why it was voluntarism.
He talked about
leisure time. No, it wasn't leisure time. No, it was something more to do with voluntarism, but he used a different word. Anyway, he put Newfoundland and Labrador top. And I can probably go back and source the information and send that back to you. I have that information. Anyway, just to move on from that now, one of the very interesting aspects of these past three presentations have, of course, been the fact that they are three presentations. So in a way, it's not one portrait, it's three portraits of different sizes and with different frames. And the question that begs itself is, for example, how come when the social economy organizations need revenue, how come they don't go to, I would imagine, the Caisse Populaire, the credit unions, and presumably get some kind of preferential deal? Unless, of course, the credit union is much more of a bank than of a credit union, right? So that's one question. The second question is, do you have the possibility of having cooperative organizations as members in other cooperative organizations? In which case, when you look at membership or even revenue, there may be a fair amount of overlap, because you could have organizations that are members of a second-level co-op and possibly second-level co-ops being members of a third-level co-op. I mean, I am quite aware, certainly in the European context, for instance, where most banks, most credit unions, will be themselves third-level co-ops. So one of the ways in which they raise revenue is by having other cooperatives as their members rather than just individuals. Thank you.
So who did, was there an actual question? No. Okay.
Just briefly on the technicality, I'm not going to speak for the co-op movement, because that's not my role in terms of, and the credit union movement, but obviously credit union have, members that are organization, right? Actually, the average in my survey, credit union had 100 organization that were member, you know, so client, you know. And of course, when you talk about Co-op Atlantic and all that, these as sort of umbrella organization, all of their member or organization. So, you know, obviously they are tiers, you know, of organizations.
Okay, George.
That's pretty much what we found from the survey, that a lot of the co-ops did not respond to it because they said their parent co-op was responsible for the financing. Like some of the co-op, the co-op insurance places and all that, and it was another co-op branch we had in Cape Breton, they said the same thing. They said our parent co-op looks after the financing. So that's how basically they handled it.
Hi, I don't think this works, actually. It's only for the record. Okay. I have three things to to talk about or to make a comment on, and I'm not sure who can respond. The first thing is about jobs. Statistics Canada has told us that there were 107,000 jobs created in Canada in the last year, and over 85%, something like 88%, are part-time. I wonder if our surveying and our mapping can reveal to us anything about part-time employment as opposed to full-time, good jobs, what we in the industry called good jobs, sociology and so on. I wonder what can be revealed about that. The other thing is that just in the last 2 weeks, the head of economics at the TD Bank has said that the vast majority of the jobs that were created, in addition to being part-time, the vast majority of the full-time jobs were in the construction industry in Canada. So we see how things are skewed in terms of employment in this country. And people are not, from what I can see anecdotally and just listening, are not being overwhelmingly employed by the sector that we're researching and trying to prop up in some way or other. A second point I just want to make is the issue of the United Way. Right now, in all our pigeonholes at the universities, at least at ours in Nova Scotia, we're asked to donate to the United Way. And people should realize the United Way is a community chest idea that grew out of the United States. And the whole idea of the United Way, you know, is to essentially give money to large, existing, non-controversial charities. And the lion's share of money in a city like Halifax, the lion's share of money raised by the United Way goes to charities, and I'm not saying anything terribly wrong with the CNIB, the Boys and Girls Club, the YMCA, goes to existing organizations that are very much part of what goes on in the community, but are not the younger or edgier or organizations which typically are serving dramatically new needs that have arisen. Finally, the question of what Penelope said about the percentage of corporate giving, corporate funding in this sector. I'm not saying she said, but she quotes this, it's only 1% here in Atlantic Canada, and yet across Canada as a whole, it's about 4%. I agree that that's a problem. I agree with that. But what I'd like to say is here in Atlantic Canada, in business schools such as the one I teach at and other ones, they're frequently talking about how great business is and how great the Sobeys are, how great the Irvings are, how great all these big local capitalist organizations are for the economy, and yet we see how little, in fact, they donate.
I think we're going to want to crack at one or another of those questions. So we have about 6 minutes left. So
I want to come back first to the point that Luke made about voluntary. This has been a huge problem for the sector that's not the public sector and not the private sector in Canada. And it's how we define ourselves or what we call ourselves. In the work that was done by the Voluntary Sector Initiative that was done in this particular piece of research, voluntary sector has been used to include everything. Charities, nonprofits, the informal organizations, everything is included if they're nonprofit distributing, point number one. And point number two, if they have volunteers in the governance role. So you can have, as long as you have volunteers in your on your board, then you fit in to this definition. But it's been a real challenge coming up with the right name for the work that we're doing. The second point I'd like to make, because Judy, I think you raised a really interesting point around United Way, but it's not only United Way, it's around businesses, it's around foundations. A lot of money that people give, they will only give to registered charities. And as many of us know, a lot of the edgier work that you're talking about, those groups can't get registered. It's not that they haven't got registered. Many of them can't get registered because the definition of what constitutes a charity is very limited. So I think that's a huge challenge. And I mean, maybe one of the things that we'd like to take on in the Atlantic region is that we should be encouraging donors to be willing to give to those that are at least registered as nonprofits, because it's fairly easy to get registered as a nonprofit, but at least it makes you a legal entity. And the other point I'd like to make, when you asked about jobs, I think one of the most surprising facts to me when I was digging through all of this data, and thank you for acknowledging that I only wrote the report, I didn't create the data, was that 3% of the employees in Atlantic Canada in this sector were working in organizations that have annual $30,000 a year. So, I mean, how could you have anyone employed if you have, you know, under $30,000 a year? You're certainly not employing them in full-time or well-paid positions.
Just briefly to answer a couple of points raised by Judy. In my survey, maybe I didn't mention this, yes, the split between part-time and full-time, 40% full-time, 60% part-time. A lot of cashier, for example, you know, whether it's at credit union or at a co-op store, may work part-time. But Judy, you seem to assume, though, that, you know, a part-time job is necessarily a bad job and that everybody wants to work full-time. I think that some of the assumption there is, you know, maybe questionable. I mean, anyway, we could, you know, I'm not sure I agree with that. But anyway, it was a 60-40 split. In terms of the United Way, I agree with you. It's sort of a conservative, sort of, you know, old-fashioned, funding organization. But sometimes, you know, in different cities, because they have autonomy and they have people in their board, they go their stuff. I was in a Regina organization for street kids that was pretty edgy. So, you know, there is hope at the margin. Anyway.
Numbers went up for the fundraising and funding to the sector, Penny. One of the first things I thought of when I saw that graph with all the money over here and all the organizations over there and where the money was, I thought, you know, and I bet that a large proportion of those organizations over there that have really small budgets and really large numbers of volunteers and practically no staff are raising money for those hospitals. And then looking at the corporate donations, I thought, well, at that number of millions of dollars to Atlantic Canada, I bet, you know, a good chunk of it is embedded in the Irving building at UPEI and the other, you know, corporate donations to universities that fill big chunks of concrete.
I'm David Epstein. I'm from Subnode 3 and from Nova Scotia. When I'm sober, I'm David Upton. And when I've had a glass of wine or two, perhaps I'm someone else. But I'm back. I wanted to comment on something that a couple people brought up that had to do with financing and financing the social economy in particular. The reality is, that, from my perspective, is that social enterprises and small businesses are treated exactly the same way by banks, and that the challenge for us and for people in social economy is to help those small organizations in particular to figure out how to deal with banks, and that there's a process, and it doesn't matter so much, I don't think, whether it's a bank, which as an organization is primarily responsible to its shareholders, or whether you're a credit union and you're primarily responsible to your members. You have a fiduciary obligation as a lender to protect the best interests of your organization. That's just the way it is. So when you go to borrow money, if the same sort of rules apply. They look at equity, they look at security, you know, they look at the credit history of the organization, and they look at guarantees. And that's where the difference between small business and social enterprises change. So as a small business owner, I go to the bank, I need to borrow $50,000 or $80,000. They look at my credit history, they look at the project, they look at all that, the security, and then they say, and Dave, you know, we need you to sign here pledging your personal guarantee that we're going to pay back. As a person who participates in the social economy, I'm not so sure that as a member of a small social enterprise, I'd be prepared to give a personal guarantee for $30,000 or $50,000. And if there was an area in which we could probably find ways to support social enterprises that are trying to get started, it would be in that area. I don't think personally, I work in the financing side of things, so I see it a lot. I don't think that that's the real challenge. I think the money's there. I would argue that large social enterprises have no problem getting money from the bank because they have a track history, they have assets, they have, all of a sudden they become acceptable.
Well, that's exactly what I would have said. But I like the data to say that. So that's why we're serving the banks also, just to see how do they understand the social economy. And, you know, the fact that the guarantees we believe is going to be one of the biggest problems. But the credit unions, in some parts of the country at least, we know they do support social enterprise at a greater extent than the banks do. And we will try to find that again when we do this survey in Prince Edward Island, where there's a lot more credit unions there. And in Arica, for example, in Cape Breton, the credit union supports the local daycare and a pile of other little enterprises that could not get financing otherwise. So that's where we're hoping the data, especially the second phase, when we're serving the banks and the credit unions, will give us this kind will fill in the gaps a little bit better in our understanding.
Yeah, I just want to make a quick comment about that, because Peter Huff with the Canadian Worker Co-op Federation, because we did a very small survey of financial providers, and unfortunately that part of our project didn't actually work through because staffing issues and supervision and whatnot just didn't work. But we did actually find that there was a distinction between the way social economy enterprises were viewed and small business. And it did relate to things like personal guarantees. It did relate to some of the kind of stuff that was spoken of here. But there did seem to be a distinct, if you went into a credit union and you're a small business, they knew what you were and within a framework that they had internally worked out. If you went in as a social enterprise, they had no framework worked out. So if you could explain yourself as the equivalent to a small business and present yourself in that fashion, then you could probably work through it. But if you didn't have that skill set and they didn't have any framework within their analysis that triggered when you came in and said you're a nonprofit social enterprise within that community. And there are some other factors, so it'll be interesting to get more data. But the other thing, I just want to make a comment about the whole notion of volunteerism, and question for Luke, just in terms of the data. It would be very interesting to know if you've segregated which organizations were paying their directors. Because one of the things that I think we have to understand is we want the social economy to be a substantial organization. If you're a director of the Cooperators Insurance, which is a social economy enterprise owned by cooperatives across Canada, it's a 40 days minimum a year job. And if you're a director of a large credit union, you're probably putting in 20 days a year. And so, you know, or if you're a large producer co-op. So, you know, there's a real distinction in terms of that. And I think one of the things that I think we need to be thinking about is that if we really are looking at the social economy as an alternative to the conventional economy, we have to recognize that as we grow and as we develop, that the notion of volunteerism, not that it should be discarded, but we have to recognize that, you know, people are need to be being paid for these really substantial contributions. We can't expect them or shouldn't be thinking that they should be doing that without compensation. So I'd like to know if there's that data there and just a comment.
We have about 3 or 4 minutes left.
Just
you can give a quickly
on this one. I don't have exact data, but it's very easy to run on the SPSS. And just looking at the data in general, yes, you're correct. It was the credit union and Caisse Populaire who gave compensation to their board member. Probably they would justify it the way you just did.
Sarah Monroe, Coastal Community Network in Nova Scotia. First, just a comment and then a question for George. In terms of, it would be really interesting to look at the volunteer stuff to see if it did include harbor authorities, because it seems that whenever anybody is working with volunteers, they seem to leave out harbor authority associations. So if that was in there, that would be really good, because I know in Nova Scotia alone, we have over 300 volunteer boards that manage harbors, which are economy depends on hugely in our fishing communities. And then my question for George is that I wondered if you looked at the Canadian Business Development Corporations and the various offices that they have, because they will invest in social enterprises. Again, they have that it must be a business, but they're willing to take risks that banks aren't, and do have a substantial fund. And so I think building that relationship with CBDC so that they better understand social enterprises is one way that we can finance that in Atlantic Canada.
Yeah, in the second phase that we're serving the suppliers of finance, CBDCs are definitely included in that list, like CBDCs, credit unions, banks, foundations, even leasing companies, because a lot of social economy organizations, they do a lot of leases and equipment leases, and that's how they manage to finance themselves. And we did look, I know this question is directed to Penny here, but in our SEOs, we did include the harbor authorities, because we looked it up and it was not an exclusive club, so it was fishermen basically participating in it, and they are included now. Not all of them responded, but but they are included.
I work for CBDCs and work on the provincial basis, and they still need. I mean, they're more likely to invest, but they still use the same basic criteria, and they're still going to need to know that their money is secure. Mm-hmm. And our challenge, and I agree with what Peter said, wherever he is there, our challenge isn't to so much change the banking system, because none of us are going to live long enough. They're going to do it to themselves, it looks like, in the States anyway. Our challenge is to change the approach that we take when we're dealing with them, because that's the only way that I can see it working.
Or create new ones. Okay, this session then is finished. You now have a break and there's some refreshments. The audio cast will, I guess something will play in the background for the next 15 minutes, but we'll resume at roughly 11 o'clock. I shouldn't say roughly. We'll resume at 11 o'clock back here in this room.